This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We all know that segregation is wrong. People should not be prevented from being able to access equal education and economic opportunities for any particular reason, and segregation still exists in America, especially for those with disabilities. Many of the barriers of inclusion can be knocked down with a solution-based approach, and understanding the needs and considerations is this part of the planning process. So how can San Antonio knock down barriers and increase inclusion for our residents with disabilities? We invite you into our conversation. Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org. We're joined this afternoon by Daniel Velasquez. He's a Paralympic shot putter and he's a disability advocate. We're also joined by Marilyn Weber. She's the president and CEO of Deaf Interpreters Services Incorporated. Melanie Calton is here. She is the executive director of Disability SA. And David Ramirez joins us. He's the director for community relations for the San Japan event here in San Antonio, which celebrates Japanese culture and animation and anime here. And he's got a lot to tell us as well. And again, our number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. So Daniel Velasquez, I'm going to go to you first because you're a Paralympic shot putter. You're a disability advocate. You're out there as a person in the disabled community, but also very active in the world. So tell us about your journey.
Yeah, so I grew up, I'm a San Antonio native, first of all, and I went to school at the International School of the Americas. And it's really what I've come to learn is barriers and stuff like that. It's really about perception. So there's this fear of the other or fear of the disabled that really needs to change in society. And so I've studied disability theory at the University of Texas at Arlington, and there are two basically competing theories in the disabled world. One of them is the social model of disability, which preaches you have an impairment, but it's the environment around you that is disabled. So let me give you a quick example. Somebody who's a dwarf, their limbs are relatively shorter than the average person, but other than that, there's really not much wrong with them. What makes them disabled is the environment. Everything is too high for them. Everything, you know, they might not be able to reach certain shelves or things like that. There's the medical model of disability, which teaches that a disabled person is broken and needs to be fixed and things like that. And unfortunately, the medical model is one that you see a lot of in society today, that disabled people are broken, that there's something wrong with them. And as a disabled person, you know, I'm 21 years old, I have an impairment, but there's nothing wrong with me. It's about adapting and getting used to the things around you with this impairment.
So we have a lot of events in San Antonio. A lot of things are happening around us all the time. And getting around from one place to the other place is, you know, it's really difficult in a city. What kind of problems do you have in that regard?
Getting around the city, I really have had no problems. You know, right now I'm working on getting a car adapted with hand controls because my cerebral palsy that I possess doesn't allow me to drive with legs. But until that happens, I've been able to utilize public transit, Uber, you know, ride sharing programs. And it's really about that. You know, you have an impairment, you're going to deal with struggles, but it's really about adapting. And it's really, especially when it comes to socialization, showing people that they can relate to you. So I do Paralympic sports. And when I went to college and founded the Paralympic track team at UT Arlington, a lot of people, especially on the athletic side and able-bodied athletics especially, they were kind of like, oh, what is this guy doing here? You know, what is it? And I was able to tell them, okay, this is Paralympic sport. It's, you know, elite. It's international competition. I do the same sports you do. And through that, you know, we're able to break down these social barriers that exist between us. So it's really about relating to people and finding common ground so that they see you as a person and they don't just see this fear of disability from the start.
Marlon Weber, President and CEO of Deaf Interpreters Services here in San Antonio. You are an advocate for those with hearing loss. Can you talk about that community and where the, and how socialization is their barriers?
Yes, thank you. Daniel hit the nail right on the head with it's the fear of the unknown, and society's view that there's something wrong with you, you're disabled, you need to be fixed. Our oldest daughter is deaf, and that's what got us into this years ago. We do need to get to the point of just total inclusion, seamless inclusion for everyone with disabilities throughout the world, throughout the country, this country especially, and narrow it down to San Antonio. Right now, we have our focus, the Texas focus, the last few days has been the hurricane. It's really hit home here because we got three shelters here that we brought people from Houston, Rockport, Corpus, all up into these shelters. With that, there are quite a few who are deaf in there and no way to communicate with them. And before I go on with that, I want to back up just a little bit. Beyond that, the last, let's say, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, even Monday, the press conferences that they've had, from the governor's press conference to the mayor's press conferences here, they've done an excellent job as far as bringing the interpreter in. We've got interpreters there that's interpreting the whole thing. However, the media then zooms right in on either the mayor or the governor, totally ignoring the fact that there's an interpreter there and that needs to get out to the deaf population. So the deaf are going nuts, like, oh my gosh, they brought the interpreter in to get this information to us, but they're blocking it and not allowing us to see the interpreter.
And this is life critical information.
Exactly. And I happened to be sitting with a lady who was deaf on Friday and in our office when this was happening. We were watching the mayor's thing, and sure enough, you could see the elbow moving of the interpreter, but you couldn't see the interpreter. And social media started blowing up like, oh my God, what's being said? All of our deaf friends, hundreds started coming in, what's happening? I'm like, oh my gosh. So I'm trying to listen to this and type back and tell them this is what they're saying. It's like, they've got the interpreter here. They're paying for the interpreter, but the news media's cut them out. So when we provided here locally, we told them, and Channel 12 did an awesome job with backing up and letting, you know, the world see the interpreter so the deaf could say, okay, this is what's going on. We need to get this information out. And back to the shelters, we have a lot of people here in the shelters now who cannot communicate, you know, verbally with the doctors and the staff there doing the intakes and things. And so we're sending out interpreters on the spot for that. But we need to, Melanie and I were talking a little bit while ago about getting things set up where they can have access to communication right away through VRI, video remote interpreting, and with, you know, just a laptop and a hotspot.
How would that work? So they would have like maybe like a Skype with someone who could interpret?
It's like Skype, but it's a confidential, it's a HIPAA compliant.
Okay.
System, yes.
All right, so we're going to talk a little bit more when we come back from this break about how the evacuation has worked for folks who are dealing with disabilities, a lot of special needs. And, you know, there are a lot of folks who have who are amputees or not ambulatory, and they're in wheelchairs, and how this is working, and how dealing with a disaster like Harvey, how it seems all the more scary when you have these considerations. And we'll talk more about that when we come back from the break. Also, we'll continue our main focus in the conversation talking about increasing disability socialization here in San Antonio. And our phone lines are open. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The source continues after this quick break. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Inclusion and socialization are important for individuals with disabilities, but there are many barriers to overcome. We're talking about socialization here in San Antonio for our community with disability. We want to integrate everybody, make sure that we have bridges, and we're able to bring everyone to our special events that we have in San Antonio and not have artificial barriers, unnecessary barriers in place that could be swept aside with this simple conversation. We're talking about that this afternoon. Call in. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. But when we went to break, we were hearing from Marlon Weber, President and CEO of Deaf Interpreters Services, about some of the special considerations that need to be put in place for many of the evacuees that we have from Harvey who are coming to San Antonio and other emergency evacuation shelters across the state. And many of these folks have disabilities, and they need, we got to consider that. And so let me ask you about that. Melanie Carlton, she's Executive Director of Disability SA. Are y'all playing a role in trying to make sure that these shelters are ready for all the different folks who show up?
So the shelters have reached out to the Disability Access Office here in San Antonio with the City of San Antonio, and I was in conversation with her yesterday, and we were talking about what is kind of a laundry list of basic items or services that we need to be sure that the shelters are aware of and have. And like we discussed in one of our earlier source conversations, to make sure that the facilities have a adult diaper changing area, to make sure that there are sensory rooms or comfort rooms where people who just need to get away from the noises and the sounds and the stimulation have a quiet place to go. Weighted blankets. Marilyn mentioned earlier, just a simple laptop with a webcam and a hotspot can help with communication. Speaking of communication, if a person is nonverbal, to have communication boards on site so that people are able to point to emotions or items of need, whether they're hungry, so that they can communicate those things to the people around them. So not only are individuals who are deaf having difficulties communicating, but people who don't use verbal language, when all they have usually is maybe an iPad at home, if they've had to leave their home, they may not have that device with them. So having those communication boards that just have those basic needs and feelings to be able to communicate. And then just some sensitivity training to alert volunteers in these systems on how to interact and engage with people with disabilities. Because even today, there's still a large segment of the population who has never come into contact or had to interact with a person with a disability, and they just don't know how, which creates fear, which creates an opportunity
and
where socialization
barriers
breaks down.
Right. So all the more reason why we should have more opportunities for socialization with all parts of our community, so that when we are brought together under dire circumstances, that we don't have these unnecessary, uncomfortable, I don't know what to do type moments. Because if you've been doing this forever for festivals and events and jobs and schools, that's just part of your day to day, right?
It's just another day in the life of. That's correct. So the more that we can develop programs that help the community of individuals with disabilities interact with community of people who do not have a disability, the better off our society is. So there are a lot of programs in town that specialize in socialization activities for people with various disabilities. But we need to do a better job of making sure that we're integrated and engaged with the community as a whole.
Right. So we saw all the water that Houston got, and just think about it. If that could have just as easily come to San Antonio, we could have gotten 30, 40 inches of rain here. Just think about what that would have been like for you or someone in your family that you love who maybe, how they would have dealt with that. If they're in a chair, if they're in a wheelchair, that water comes up pretty quick. It looks very different for you if you have to deal with that. So let me ask you, Daniel Velasquez, either our disability Paralympic shot putter and advocate. Did you look at these Harvey videos and see, oh my gosh, does it look different to you, do you think?
I wouldn't say it looks different, but if you see somebody in a wheelchair again, we've gone back to this, pretty much the whole time we've been on air, but I don't think you can stress it enough. It goes back to perception and communication. So if you have somebody who's an amputee and maybe, their leg got swept in a flood, or you have somebody in a chair who needs rescuing, don't just go in there and lift them up and take them away because you think that's the best thing to do and to get them out. if you're able, talk to them. Talk to them. What is the best way I can help you get out? You know, maybe not all disabilities. If you move away a certain way, you know, you could cause some spasms or cause further injury. So it's really about perception and communication of the disabled to the people going in and rescuing.
Sure, and preparation.
Yeah, be prepared. I mean, yeah, Melanie just talked about it with people who were non-verbal or, you know, might not be able to speak in traditional ways. Be prepared, and it goes, I mean, it goes back to perception. If you're afraid of people with disabilities and you're not around them and you're not willing to just kind of take a step back and get into their world, when something like this happens, and you said it could easily happen here, you're not going to be ready. You're not going to be prepared for something like this.
And Melanie?
Daniel makes an excellent point about asking if you can assist somebody and how best to assist them, because it's oftentimes when we're able-bodied that we think, oh, we know what's best for somebody. And a really good example, I was sitting with a gentleman the other day who was blind, and his earbuds were in an incredibly tangled knot. And I asked if I could assist him in undoing them because he couldn't see. And he's like, no, thank you. And so I watched him as he worked through it, and he was very capable, obviously. But an important thing to remember when you're asking somebody if you can assist is not to get offended if they decline. Not everybody needs our assistance, and we don't always know what's best.
Right. So let's not all be all fragile and rigid about these things. Just like if someone asked you to do something that you were capable of doing, you would just say, no, I've got it.
That's
and not
true.
To worry about it.
Yes. And so we need to make sure that we're giving the same respect to everybody. And if somebody declines our assistance, just be gracious and say, okay, great. And don't be offended by that.
David Ramirez is with us. He's the community relations director for San Japan. What is San Japan? Give us a quick rundown what that is.
Sure. San Japan is the San Antonio Japanese Culture and Anime Convention. We happen
It's very popular.
Year. Oh, yeah. This is our 10th year coming up. We're expecting between 15,000 and 20,000 people at the Henry B. Gonzalez over Labor Day weekend. And so we celebrate Japanese culture, animation, East Asian culture, and internet fandoms. So blogs, web comics, online cartoons, all sorts of rich media that's coming from either East Asia or the internet.
And y'all are very on the forefront of making sure that this is an event that's accessible to all.
Right. So in 2014, we launched our San Japan Cares framework, which is initially started out as a way to increase accessibility for people with disabilities. In the decade or so that I've been event planning, the idea is that ADA is sufficient. And I think that's a horrible idea for anyone who's planning events. ADA is the bare minimum for venues and physical locations. Access is the bare minimum for special events. Access should never be the goal. It needs to be inclusion and dignity. And so this framework has been designed to ensure that all of attendees, whether they are young, old, disabled, you know, whatever it may be, are part of this convention. And so we have people who are on spectrum that are part of the staff. We have panelists in wheelchairs that are on wheelchair accessible stages so that there's no separation from them and other panelists. We have low sensory rooms for people who might need to get away for a little bit. And so we just want to make sure that no matter what, as long as you're part of this fandom and part of this community that's 20,000 strong here in San Antonio, you can come and celebrate and get your geek on, and nothing will impede you in that process.
Can you talk about how this inclusion makes San Japan even more rich experience for everyone?
I really believe that anime and East Asian culture, there's lots of others in their portrayals. There are monsters and giant robots. And so the idea that we are a space that celebrates the otherness, whether you are LGBT, whether you are a social minority, whether you're disabled, everyone in this space appreciates and celebrates otherness. And so we can at least sympathize and empathize with everyone's different situations. And that's what makes San Japan unique, is that all of us are looking for opportunities to experience different worldviews, to talk and to engage, and not just to meet celebrities. It's all about that the community building that happens.
And so in the cosplay, I see a lot of interesting, that's where people dress up as different characters or items or concepts from the anime culture and comic books and stuff. You see a lot of people who are part of the disabled community actually sort of playing with their you know, with their, what, you know, how they are.
Absolutely. So we have Christina Gonzalez, who's been doing panels for us for a number of years, and she does cosplay ability. And she's in a wheelchair, and so she talks about how can you incorporate your wheelchair into your cosplay. We have people like Lori McCarthy, who's our San Japan Cares floor manager, and she cosplays with her service dog. And so it's, you can incorporate all these things and still be part of the community. There's no limitations because it's all a celebration of media and fandom, and you know, disability is just another aspect of that.
But San Japan gets really crowded. You know, it's, you know, you've got to muscle your way through the crowds too. So how do y'all draw that into consideration?
When we're looking at floor planning, we really do spend months and months. I have the 2020 floor plan sitting on my desk at home right now. And so we just think, you know, how would someone in a wheelchair get through this space? How would someone in a 7 foot tall robot costume get through this space? Realistically, when we're trying to plan for a giant robot, that's a little more difficult to plan for than a wheelchair. And so it's just, you know, how would I experience this if I were on spectrum? How would I experience this if I were deaf or blind or have a mobility issue? Or, you know, we really try to go through this and walk through the venue as many times as possible and think, if something happens, how would people, for whatever access need, get in, get out, or get through?
And so based on your experience planning San Japan Cares and looking at accessibility for all and trying to not just meet the ADA requirements, but actually make this something that everyone can enjoy, do you ever go to other events and go, what are these people thinking? You know, they could do so much better. It wouldn't take a lot of effort. They just need to plan a little better.
Yes, I try not to look at it that way too often because sometimes I'm just kind of cringing, like, oh, no, look at that door. Oh, look at that line control there. Ooh, there should be an interpreter at this panel. But we've released the framework for San Japan Cares through RAC, which is the National Anime Organizing Organization here in the USA. And so other conventions in Boston, in Denver, even some in Canada have started to adopt this framework and to understand that anime cons and fan cons and these sort of rich media spaces are a prime place for people to socialize and really engage with different communities from their own.
And San Japan, you're basically, it's a volunteer-driven organization, right?
Correct. We have one full-time staff member. We have a board of directors. That's five people. And the rest of it are just people who are on board and have been along this wild ride for 10 years.
So it just shows you what a solution-based approach can do for a group. You're not a bunch of professionals, don't have a lot of money to throw at this stuff, but with the right attitude, you can make changes, and a lot of people can learn from San Japan and how to make bring about inclusion and socialization for everyone in our community.
And I think it's fair to say that, you know, people will make false steps, event planners will make false steps. We just have to always reach out and ask our community, is this the right way for us to do this? How can we be more accessible? And just go with it.
And San Japan is when?
Labor Day weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday coming up.
All right. Okay, so we're going to take a break. We'll come back. We'll continue our conversation. And we got a lot of callers here. We'll get them on the air when we come back. We're talking about living with disability here in San Antonio on The Source, how socialization is important, how we need to bring about socialization for the young and the old and everyone who are dealing with disabilities. And this is how we make San Antonio a more compassionate city and prepare for when we have issues like a Hurricane Harvey and we're not mounted with additional worries, that this would actually be part of our day today. Call in. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The Source continues after this break. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. One of life's greatest joys is the comfort and confidence that we find in others. Most of us, either by nature or nurture, are social creatures that need the companionship of others through friendship, romance, careers, and family. But what happens when there are artificial barriers that are keeping many of us from being able to engage in social environments that many of us take for granted? If so many of us who have disabilities are trying to access these events, but they find these barriers. And a conversation like the one we're having this afternoon could be all it takes to clear this up. And we invite you into our conversation to talk about maybe some of the barriers that you have found for either yourself or someone in your family, someone you love. Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Adam is on the line. And Adam, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, Dave. How are you doing?
Good, sir. Go. Hey, Adam. How are you doing, bud?
Good. The one thing I wanted to say, and, you know, one of the previous callers sort of said something like this, you know, the ADA should never be something that's considered the gold standard. It works for some people, but disabilities are not mutually specific. So getting a disabled person involved in, you know, in just the simplest kind of things, the you know, where a doorknob is located, the fixtures in a store, just getting the disabled community involved in sort of planning your space, your event, your new store would really be a great and helpful thing.
All right, Adam, thank you for the call. I appreciate that. So Melanie Crothan, talk about that.
So one of the areas where Disability SA is trying to outreach to the San Antonio community is to make sure that people with all types of disabilities are engaging in community conversation through local planning efforts. So if you go on to the City of San Antonio's website right now and look at the vacancies in city councils and commissions and committees, there are a ton of vacancies. And we'd like to go ahead and take this opportunity to encourage people with disabilities to get out there and put in your application for those slots and start to become part of the conversation of what makes San Antonio happen. In addition to that, the physical spaces, when we have these SA tomorrow conversations around town, when there's public forums in your community, make sure you get out, because city growth and expansion and those types of activities are part of those conversations. So as we can emphasize, you know, new construction and coordination of programs and services in San Antonio, if the individuals with disabilities will get into those conversations, make themselves available in those spaces to be a part of those planning processes, I think that could make a huge impact on San Antonio and the direction that we're going.
Daniel Velasquez, you're a disability advocate, Paralympic shot putter, and you're a leader in this area as well, because you went to school, they didn't have the program, and you started it yourself, right?
Yeah, so I went, University of Texas Arlington is one of the more, I would call it, disability forward schools in the nation. So they have a wheelchair basketball program that's been around for decades now, and they were the first school to offer full scholarships to athletes with disabilities, but they did not have Paralympic track and field. And so I went there when I was going to college. I wanted a place to train full time and a place to compete in Paralympic sports. So I talked to people over there and I said, look, here's where I want to do. I want to go to the Paralympics. I want to do these things. What can we do to make it happen? And they said, you can start a Paralympic track and field team here. So right now we were the first school really to offer competitive Paralympic track and field in the nation in 2014. And then since then, I think San Diego State University has funded one, and I worked with them in their beginnings. And so, yeah, I mean, I think it's just about, again, just communication and letting people know, hey, you know, especially in the sports area, these things affect people. You can do really good things in sports. You know, Paralympic sports is an elite competition, elite athletes compete, and it's about breaking those barriers of, whoa, I don't know what Paralympic sports is, I'm not going to touch that, I'm afraid of that, and welcoming, you know, the athletes with open arms.
I think you're not giving yourself enough credit, because I mean, I think that takes an incredible amount of bravery to go up to anybody and try and start an organization, and being able to do that at the university and then say, I want to do this. And, you know, you have to occupy a very certain, a special kind of mental space in order to do that. I mean, it's not easy.
It's not easy, but, I mean, living with a disability isn't easy. To me, that, you know, starting a program at a university, that was just the start. I wanted somewhere where I can train, and I wanted somewhere where I would be appreciated. And so University of Texas at Arlington welcomed me in, but when I started it, I was never under the impression I'm scared to go approach these people. If you're living with a disability, you have to adapt to your situation. So I've been adapting to various social situations my whole life. So starting a program, it was really just the next step.
All right. Well, I think you did great. Anyway, Fernando's on the line. Let's get him on the radio. Hey, Fernando, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. I'm calling to help create a little bit of awareness that there is an organization, nonprofit, helping families that have been impacted by Hurricane Harvey, and that's Mission Road Ministries, and they're working with the food bank and also Pets Alive, and they're collecting goods and also helping families that have been impacted by housing them at Mission Road Development Center, the south end of town, and they're taking goods at the Unicorn Center and the Medical Center area. People can look that up online, it'd be great to help them. I've been involved with them for years as a volunteer. I have a son who has autism, has benefited tremendously from their programs, and have a sister and a brother that are also and have a disability and have learned and developed themselves quite a bit through the Mission Road.
Fernando, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. He brought up the Unicorn Center. The Unicorn Center does a lot of great work with job opportunities for people who have disabilities. And so, Melanie, can you talk a little bit about, you know, economic opportunities, jobs? The unemployment rate for people with disabilities is phenomenal, and we need to at least talk about that.
Sure. So there's a lot of barriers to having jobs for people with various types of disabilities, from the number of hours they're allowed to work to how it impacts their benefits. And that when we're looking at benefits from Medicaid and disability services, that it's not just the financial or the monetary part that comes in, but all of the services that Medicaid provides to allow people to live independently. So take an individual with an intellectual developmental disability, they're working the maximum number of hours. And I know a person who hasn't been able to get a raise in about 10 years because $1 more an hour is going to mean he loses over $40,000 worth of in-home supports. Even though he doesn't see that monetarily, he can't afford to regain those services by just getting a salary increase. But there's a ton of other issues, from being able to get to work with transportation, to be able to live in the area where the jobs are. I know, like, VIA doesn't travel outside of 1604, and there's a call center who is wanting to hire people with vision impairments, but people who rely on public transportation cannot get out to that facility. So even though we have an employer willing to hire, they can't get there because of transportation restrictions. There's issues of the fear of the unknown. So somebody, you turn in an application, they look great, you go in for an interview, somebody sees a visible disability, and all of a sudden the candidate may not
right.
get
suddenly,
any further.
Yeah, suddenly the application got lost. But so Marilyn Weber, with the hearing impaired community, is getting employment a very difficult thing?
Sure, definitely it is. Very much like all the other quote-unquote disabilities. With that, the deaf community sees themselves not necessarily as, well, it's kind of divided, but as a community of, you know, disabled people, but it's a cultural aspect also. And then the employers that hire these people, if they get hired, they're like, oh my gosh, how are we going to communicate with them? I don't want to have to pay for an interpreter every time I want to say something. I don't want to, you know. But there's so many ways they can build this into their hiring protocol, and it's very, very inexpensive. And you don't have to have an interpreter there all the time with them. But yes, or they'll hire the deaf for meaningless little jobs or janitorial jobs only and things like that. Well, we have a deaf doctor here in San Antonio. Our legal counsel, a deaf judge. I mean, they need to understand that it's these disabilities don't limit their abilities. They're just differently abled as opposed to disabled.
Okay, so talk about some of the accommodations that would be easy for an employer to provide to be able to get over those hurdles. I
mean, well, initially, you want to have an interpreter for the interview. That's a must. And any large team meetings or things like that, you want to have an interpreter for. But there's different ways for adapting them if they work at their desk and they need to make phone calls. You know, there's through what used to be called Relay Texas. Now they have Video Relay, but it's for phone services, so for the deaf to make phone calls to hearing individuals or whatnot, so they can do those kind of call center things. They can work at their desk and make phone calls every day to the hearing population. They can, you know, do things like that, have a webcam and things set up internally there so you can see face-to-face with your peers. And there's a lot of different types of technology there that's really, really cheap and easy to do to be able to employ a person who is deaf.
So you think there's a fertile world out there for people with hearing impairment who they should be getting these jobs, but unfortunately these barriers are in place, and these barriers could be swept aside with these minor accommodations.
Definitely. And Melanie struck on one point too with the any benefits that I may be getting with it are going to be cut out if they take on a job, even a part-time job, but they're wanting to get one for their own self-esteem, but they need more money to support their family than the little bit that they get there. But if they work over an X number of hours, it's going to be cut. And we sat down the other day with an individual I hired and trying to figure out how, and it's like, you know, she's doing all this and now has to pay for childcare, and she's just barely making then what she could make, you know, from SSDI. It's like, we want to get them off of SSDI if they can, and get out and get jobs and let them be, you know, like everyone else in this community.
All right. One more break, and we continue our conversation about socialization and integration of our friends here in San Antonio living with disabilities. Our phone lines continue to be open. We'll get to more of these calls. Numbers 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The Source continues after this. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about socialization and integration with our friends here in San Antonio, people living with disabilities. Some of the barriers that we have in our community are artificial. They're created through misunderstanding, lack of communication, and hopefully we can clear some of those up this afternoon. Call in if you got a question or a comment. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Kylie is on the line. Kylie, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, how's it going? I've been listening to the radio show, and I just wanted to put a word out there as far as some of the disabilities that we see are physical and visual, but myself, I've been diagnosed with bipolar and also major depressive disorder. And so especially with these people that are the flood victims, maybe coming in from Houston or other places, what they're suffering from might not be visual. So as far as inclusion is just knowing that people around you, like one out of five people are dealing with a mental health issue, and there's over 100,000 people in Bexar County alone that have a diagnosis of some kind. So as far as radical inclusion, like one of the things that I do to be social so that I don't isolate at home is go to a place called the Santa Community for people that have a diagnosis. And I have a place to go to learn life skills, living skills, and be around people during the day that have some of the same struggles that I suffer from.
Right. So that was the San Antonio Clubhouse. I think we had a little glitch on the radio when you mentioned the name. And the San Antonio Clubhouse, we've had them on the air, and I've done stories about them. And, yeah, they're a great organization.
Yeah, so you're talking about physical disabilities. I was just going to, you know, give a shout-out for the people that are in the flood victims coming into San Antonio now. A lot of them are going to be dealing with these issues like PTSD and depression and things like that.
Absolutely.
And so we have to also include them. As far as disabilities go, we also have to discuss mental health issues as well.
All right, Kylie, thank you for bringing that up. I appreciate that. And so, Melanie Cawthorn, you bring that up also. People who are in the evacuation centers are dealing with lack of sleep. They're uncomfortable. They probably haven't had a good meal in a long time, and all the stress. They don't know what happened to their homes, or they're going to be maxed out.
They are, and a good majority of people are going to need know and realize what kind of supports they need to be able to either self-regulate or self-comfort. And we need to focus on communication, which is a big part of socialization, but also we need to operate in a sphere of respect for each other, because I know that that oftentimes when a disability is invisible, the general public sometimes casts doubt on what somebody is telling them. And we need to be respectful of what people are communicating and make sure that we do everything that we can to put supports in place that enable people to be able to be in these shelters or be in a social environment or be out in the community.
Earlier you mentioned weighted blankets. What are those?
That is a tool or a support that is used in mostly for people who have sensory issues or a sensory disability. It is a comforting tool that helps people sometimes with spatial awareness to know that they're secure. So it's a de-escalation tool.
And they have them at the centers normally, or?
No, this was part of a conversation of what do we need to put in place at the shelters that are, you know, low cost, quick and easy things that we can get out there to make sure that people who have various disabilities in the shelters have some of the supports that they would have had at home or need to be able to operate in an environment that is a little chaotic and is unfamiliar and has a lot of people in it.
All right, another caller. This is Jordan. And Jordan, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. I'm a student at San Antonio College as a sign language interpreter, and I'm still finishing up my degree. But I wanted to say that I did a lot of volunteer work at the San Antonio Lighthouse for the Blind off of Roosevelt Avenue, and I was astounded by the unity that they have there. And downstairs is where they have the capability for older adults who are blind to work on, you know, pens, putting them and assembling together, or military hats. You know, they put ports of those together, and at the very end, they just say, like, "Na na na na, goodbye," like that little oldie song. And it's just, in unison, just so beautiful to just witness that. And upstairs is where I actually volunteered, where I hung out with the children and just kind of, they did a work in force of just kind of integrating different side jobs that they might encounter, you know, like folding towels or utensils, or just kind of getting used to, like, server jobs, hotel jobs, just all kinds of different starting off careers. And I really respected that place, and I think it's very important to, like other callers were referencing, different points of, you know, how to get involved, these gyms around San Antonio, and San Antonio Lighthouse Blind is definitely one. And I wanted to say that last caller, Daniel, or David, I'm sorry, I caught the tail end of that. Phenomenal gentleman. Round of applause to him, and thank you for being an outstanding citizen, and that means a lot. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Jordan, for that call. So talking about economic opportunity and jobs, Daniel Velasquez, what does it look like for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're talking about economic opportunities and getting jobs in the future, a lot of it goes back to education. When you raise a disabled child, raise them to the best of your ability, and if they're able, raise them to say, hey, you can go to college, hey, you can do these things, you can be a productive member of society. You know, like, I forgot what it was, but I think it's something like less than a third or maybe a fourth of people with disabilities get a college degree. And that's incredible. And part of that is just our own fears, thinking, okay, we need to cradle this disabled child growing up so that he never gets hurt, he never falls down, he never experiences the world. Well, then that contributes to the economic disparities that you see in the disabled community. You need to push for inclusion in society, and if persons are able, you need to push for a college degree. That'll really help out.
Mentorship is important in all areas, and we know that this is an area where we could probably do a lot better. Do you have any thoughts on that, Marilyn Weber?
Yes. And there are a lot of disabled individuals here in San Antonio that do have high-level college educations and things that are still seeking jobs and looking for jobs because of what barriers that the employer sees would be issues. I know there was a few years ago, part of what we do is I go into businesses and help do some cultural mediation with companies that have either a deaf employee or bring them on, or someone with a disability, and working with their hearing or able-bodied peers there. And they had brought me in at one point saying, we've got an individual we're going to bring in here to interview for a very high-level job. Flew him in from Boston, and his resume is amazing. They found out he was deaf, like the day before, and they panicked. Well, he's got to work on this team. How are we going to do this? So we sat for hours around a table, discussed, one, what to ask him, how to do it, and how it can easily be done. And the following week, he was brought in for an interview. They had the interpreter there, but they didn't want the interpreter to interpret for him because we wanted to see what he can do on his own. Well, he came in aware of that. Then he took over. He says, okay, this is my interpreter. I'm going to do this. I will ask her to interpret if I'm having trouble following along with the conversation. At the end of this 2 or 3 hour multiple people interview process, he knocked their socks off. He was amazing. And we knew for sure, okay, this is great. He's gotten this job. A few months later, I meet one of the top people at another event I'm at. We were talking about him. And he said, oh, no, we ended up not hiring him. Oh, really? You know, what was it? Well, he was overqualified. But this is for one of the top think tank positions around. Overqualified. They were, again, nervous, like, oh, my gosh. They were afraid of how are we going to interact with this person on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, we still get that a lot.
Last point on that, it goes back to really perception and mm-hmm. and what people think about disabilities. And really, a lot of these issues, they can be fixed quite easily. I mean, this gentleman sounds highly qualified for the position, and they were afraid to, and it's natural to be afraid of things that you're not aware of, so sometimes there's no fault to that, but they were afraid of what they didn't know. How are they going to adjust this deaf person? And they were afraid, and they panicked, and they backed out, and you see that a lot. But really, I mean, the solution is super simple. Get an interpreter for this man, and your problem, for the most part, is pretty much solved. And this is a grown man with you know, his disability. I'm sure he's had to adapt situations before. And if he's, you know, as highly qualified as I'm sure he is, he would have had no problem adapting to certain responsibilities at the job.
And succeeding.
Yeah.
All right. Real quick shout out, Melanie, to Fiesta Especia.
Great. So that is another event here in San Antonio that goes to great lengths. It's put on by Disability SA, and it's just another example of how we can put supports in place. So David was talking about the San Japan Convention and all of the things that they put into place to make sure people feel included. The Fiesta Especial Celebration Day, which happens during the Fiesta celebration, brings in adult diaper changing stations. We have a private eating area, so people who maybe use a tube to eat their lunch don't have to be out in public. We have an RN on site to address any issues. We put chairs out at all of the rides to make sure people who can't stand in line can sit. And it's just an environment of inclusion where we bring in law enforcement and the carnival operators, and everybody's aware, and it's a wonderful time for all.
All right. I want to thank everyone for joining us in this conversation as we talk about making San Antonio a more inclusive city for everyone, including our friends and loved ones with disabilities. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.